Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Over the Rainbow Show with your host Bob Brown on Wednesday, 27th July 2016 at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 o'clock Pacific Time, and 8 p.m. UK Time. And to all the listeners from around the world, the number to ring the show is 347-539-5367. I'm from the UK. 001-347-539-5367. And the chat room is open. Well, I'm back. I had my operation on the 19th of July, a total knee replacement. It hasn't been easy. I thought it was going to be, oh, you'd be all right, Bob. You'll be in and out. But I had a rude awakening. Never told me about the pain and what you're going through. And nowadays is you go in, have it done. If you can walk and you can look after yourself, you can go home. So I came over after 4 days. I'm back home on my own. You don't get any aftercare or anything like that. So you've just got to manage on your own and ask your neighbours to come in just to give you a bit of an hand. I'm doing all right. Still a little bit of pain, but never mind. I always think there's a lot more people out there worse than what I am. Well, we're going to have a really good show tonight with my guest tonight. I've been fascinated by this subject since 2001. I had some contract work in West Yorkshire, about 60 miles away from where I left, so I travelled home, Went in, threw my case down, got my swimming gear, and I went to the sauna. Had a swim, got in sauna, and somebody said, have you heard on the news today? I said, heard what? He said, 9/11. Anyway, told me the story. And when I got back and I looked at it, that was later on that day. So I didn't see the first shots of what Fox News had put out or anything like that. So today I've got Rebecca Roth. Now Rebecca's well known. She's the most well known person in all the world who has put together one book, two books, and she's on a third book at the moment. But she's the foremost expert on the events of September 11th, 2000. Can we please welcome Rebecca Roth to the show? Hello, Rebecca.
Well, hi, Bob. How's it going over there?
It's all right across the pond, as we always say, across the pond. You know,
that's
we talk
exactly
about 9/11 and all this. How did you get into it at the beginning? I know you were a stewardess and all that. Can you just give us a bit of insight, you know, how you got into writing about 9/11?
Well, sure, I can do that. You know, I was never a conspiracy nut. In my retirement in around 2008 or 9, somewhere in there, I wanted to write just a fun novel for people to read at the pool, you know, something light and fun for mostly women about being a flight attendant. And I was about two chapters into it, and I wanted to introduce a Middle Eastern character for this character that was in my book. And I Google searched 19 Arab hijackers 9/11, and you'll like this. Up in front of me came a BBC article that told me that at least a half a dozen of the accused hijackers were still alive. And that article was written, I believe, September 21st, 2001. And I was like, how did I miss that? Because I was flying until 2004, and I would have paid closer attention if I knew that at least a half a dozen of those guys actually lived through one of the four crashes, supposedly, that took place. And once I realized that, I was so stunned, quite frankly, that I put my fun light reading novel aside and I opened a new project. And that was to find out what really took place if there were really hijackers alive. And yet the Saudi government was suing the FBI of the United States for falsely identifying its citizens as participants in hijackers, and I had never heard that before either. And I was, you know, in the industry, so I was just shocked to learn this. Then later on, I found an article where the Attorney General and the head of the FBI in the United States actually admitted that quite possibly.
You just went off a bit then. Hello? She's gone, but she'll be back on in a minute. What she was trying to say is some of the events was what were on Fox News. A lot of it wasn't. She's back again. We're just having a few technical problems. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello. Sorry. Now, did you miss all of that or just the very last?
We missed a little bit of the last bit you were talking about.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just going to pay attention to my connection here on Skype, and I'll make sure that I call you right back if it falls off again. But I realized that they were actually admitting that these hijackers that now have gone down in history for now 15 years as the real perpetrators were not really on board at all, I had to ask the question, what really did happen? And so as I started looking, I realized that the flight attendants and the pilots did not follow the Federal Aviation Administration set in stone hijack protocols. They didn't use our code words. They didn't do what they should have done. And then I started wondering why. And then as I read through as much real documentation as I could find, one of the things I found about 9/11 was there were hundreds of conspiracy nuts out there with crazy conspiracies, and everything from the fact that the four planes of 9/11 never took off to the fact that some of them created conspiracies that the flight attendants had been kidnapped inside the terminal. Inside, now, when we go to work, we're inside a secure terminal, inside the secure area. And so I started to read just crazy lunacy from people. And as I gravitated toward government documentation and real data, I realized that the cell phone calls supposedly being made could not have been made, because in 2001, the technology did not allow you to make a cell phone call. Even today, I get email from people that were on just a plane and about 1,500 feet. Now, that's just between 1 and 2,000 feet. Just on takeoff, yes. Did they lose reception? And now today in 2015-16, we have some aircraft that are equipped with a Wi-Fi technology that your smartphone can use. But in 2001, just the aluminum aircraft and the wiring and such inside the aircraft acted like a Faraday cage, and most cell phones didn't even work on the ground. And when I realized that, I started to look at the details that the flight attendants were saying. And I realized, for instance, the first two flight attendants from the very first flight involved called in to crazy places. One of them called a reservations line. Now, if you've ever called Ryanair or British Air or any airline across the world into the reservations line, you know you're going to be on hold. That is not a place that a flight attendant would call. We have numbers. Every airline has numbers for security, and that would get us direct contact with the security forces in the airline, which then are connected to the FAA, air traffic controllers, and the military to scramble jets. And I thought, well, now this girl's been flying 12 years. She knows better. Why would she do that? Only if someone was telling her. And then the things that she said, Bob, pointed out to me that they could not be in the air, because she said that the hijacker, meaning just one man, she referred to him as he, had sprayed pepper spray or mace in business class, and they couldn't breathe in business class. Now, if you've ever been on a flight where even a baby poo-poos their diaper, the smell of anything will cross through first class, business class, coach class, economy class, K class, thrift class, any class on the airplane in a pressurized cabin. And if you sprayed pepper spray or mace, even the flight attendants and the flight crew would be breathing that. This girl was on the phone 27 minutes and never showed or complained of any of the effects of pepper spray or mace, which told me the aircraft was no longer pressurized. And that's how I discovered that from the very first flight, there were two flight attendants that called in. Interestingly enough, she also said something else that didn't make any sense for the type of aircraft she was on, a 767. That is a wide-body, two-aisle aircraft, much like a DC-10, but only one layer, one level. She said he stood upstairs.
Yes, I don't want those.
Uh-huh. Right. He stood upstairs, and there are no stairs in that aircraft, only in the 747. And I thought, well, I've been in a lot of hangars for large aircraft, for 747s, and even some larger military planes on military bases. And I realized that she was letting us know that she was in a hangar, on the ground, in a hangar.
Yes.
And so what I started to look for then, that was about 20 minutes after departure from Boston, Massachusetts. And I found an Air Force base that was a reserve base for the Galaxy C5 transport with an 11,595-foot runway. That's what they needed, a long runway. And they needed a base where nobody, no civilians would be. Later on, after I did some really large audience radio shows, a military person called me that had been based there in the reserves. They were called up the morning after the second tower was struck by something and activated. And when they got to the base, they were told the base had actually been evacuated of all personnel, and they were locked out for 2 to 3 days. Now, what I also found out,
yes,
what I also saw in these flight attendants from the first two flights, this first gal that called out, she said another thing that was impossible for her to know. She said, "We're the first." And they were the first of four airplanes, but there's no way she would have known that unless someone would have told her the scenario that we were about to see for the day.
Yes.
The other flight attendant that called made a mistake no flight attendant would make, and she claimed that the hijacker, again, was one man, a he, she referred to him, and she claimed that he was seated at 9B, as in boy. Now, I looked up to see who that was because later on she called back and somehow magically got a connection on her cell phone, which was nearly impossible to do, but I looked up to see who 9B was, and lo and behold, 9B was an anti-hijacking specialist, a hostage rescue specialist, that's someone who rescues hostages from hijacked aircraft, in a special forces unit from a foreign military called the Sayeret Matkal, and it's a branch of the Israeli Defense Forces unit.
How strange is that?
Well, now, interestingly enough, as I looked into this gentleman, his friends and partners and other soldiers in the Sayeret Matkal, by the way, there was also another gentleman who was in your BBC studios that morning who also was in the Special Forces Sayeret Matkal, Ehud Barak. Now, Ehud Barak right away was out telling the world that this was Osama bin Laden and that we needed a war on terror before anybody knew anything, before even the FAA here had gotten all the planes on the ground. Ehud Barak, who had just been in New York City the day before, somehow in the BBC studios knew that it was Osama bin Laden behind this and we needed a war on terror. Interestingly enough,
true,
so was another gentleman involved in the Sayeret Matkal, Bibi Netanyahu. Coincidence? I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. So that is a mistake a flight attendant would never make, and I'll tell you why. In the event of a hijacking, the name of the game is to get the plane and the passengers safely on the ground where a hostage rescue special team, like the Sayeret Matkal, but here in the United States, it would be an FBI or some other agency's special operations. Maybe it would be Navy SEALs or something like that, depending upon what city you landed your aircraft in. But the hostage rescue people are highly trained on everything about that aircraft, how the doors work, how the jump seats work, how the interphone works, how the PA system works, everything. So here we have a guy on American Flight 11, the first plane to take off, and he knows all of this, and his friends said that he could kill any human being using a pen and a credit card. But now we're led to believe that he was actually killed by two tiny 5'6" hijackers that were seated in the row behind him, that for some reason, an unexplained reason, as they were on their way to take over the cockpit, they decided to slice him up with a plastic box cutter, razor blade, and kill him. He's a hero right now in Israel.
Oh, yeah.
And that started me on the quest for finding out who else was involved, and it wasn't 19 Arab hijackers. I've actually found
exactly.
10 of them still alive.
You found 10 of them?
I found 10 are still alive, so we know that. But interestingly enough, Bob, one of the things that spurred me on at that point, when I discovered the BBC article and Ehud Barak was in the studios, and remember he was telling this gal, Jane Stanley, she was a reporter for the BBC stationed there in New York, and she did a report about 20 minutes before the Solomon Building, or what we know as Building 7 of the World Trade Center, before it collapsed. She was reporting that it had already collapsed and it's standing right behind her in the window. So do you think Ehud Barak knew that Building 7 was wired for demolition? Because we all saw it fall straight down to the ground like a demolition.
We did. That's so true as well. And it always makes you wonder then, when you see things like that going down, my first thought was, that's not right. That's somebody's detonated that by looking at it. I've seen people detonate buildings before, going back 10 years or 20 years ago. I know a guy who used to do them. And when I first saw it, I thought, that's been detonated. No planes have gone into that.
And, you know, in the United States, the media gave very, very little coverage to that building falling down. That Building 7, the Solomon Building, was never mentioned in the official 9/11 Commission report from the hearings that they held. But one of the things that really got me interested was one of the chairman of the 9/11 Commission hearings named Thomas Keene and the vice chairman of that 9/11 Commission wrote a book, and the book is called Without Precedent. The inside story of the 9/11 Commission. And in that book, Thomas Keene wrote that the commission, the 9/11 Commission, was so frustrated with repeated misstatements by the Pentagon and the FAA that the 9/11 Commission itself considered an investigation into possible deception by these two government bodies concerning their response to the 9/11 attacks. And when I read that, I realized what he was saying was the Pentagon and the FAA were lying and covering up the real story. And that sort of urged me along to continue my research. And then I found, coincidentally, that the phone calls from all of the other aircraft that came from two other airports, Washington, D.C.'s Dulles and Newark International's Newark Airport, Liberty Airport, that the flight time to this particular abandoned reserve base that had been evacuated was exactly fitting to the time the phone calls were made. Those phone calls, they claimed, were made from the air. And what I found out was that the details that the passengers or the crew members were saying didn't go along with the fact of the location of where the FAA claimed the aircraft were located. As altitude-wise, for the phone calls to be possible, and even the location. For example, there were two gentlemen that called in from United 175. We're led to believe that hit the South Tower, the second plane to hit the towers. That aircraft, at the time of the phone calls that those two gentlemen made, was directly over the Hudson River, going to the north from the south, to the left side of the aircraft where the pilot who was phoning, who was an employee for the company called MITRE, and he was a military pilot looking down 5,000 feet elevation at Newark International Airport. The other gentleman on the right side of the aircraft was looking at the Manhattan skyline and the Statue of Liberty in the middle of the Hudson River. Now, the gentleman on the left looking at Newark told his mother on the phone call, this is about 2 to 3 minutes before impact, supposedly, that he thought they were over Ohio. It's impossible that a pilot couldn't recognize Newark International.
True.
And it's also impossible that a gentleman from Boston couldn't recognize the Statue of Liberty, the Hudson River, and the Manhattan skyline. So I realized that those gentlemen weren't really on a plane located there at all, or they would have told us the truth.
Yeah, they were told things to say. But one of my questions was, when the news first came out about 9/11, there wasn't much around at that time, but later on that evening, things changed.
Well, this it's very much like current day false flags, if you'll notice. You're going to see right now that there's shootings all the time or some type of event where it's a mass casualty, and there's always, according to the eyewitnesses, three shooters or three people involved. And then by the time, you know, an hour or two or three goes by, it's one shooter and he's dead. And you'll see that repeated over and over again. You also see that similarities here. On 9/11, they claimed that a paper passport from Mohammed Atta, who, by the way, is still alive, that it survived the impact from the North Tower from the 767 crashing in there, and it is the only thing that survived, and it floated to the ground in front of a policeman, actually the police chief, of New York City, who later on went to Iraq and was training the Iraq police, along with a gentleman who became the governor of Iraq, who was the CEO of Marsh & McLellan, which, by the way, he just so happened to have not gone to work in the North Tower that day and was sitting in one of the local TV studios to again tell us that this was a war on terror and Osama bin Laden. Now, how would a financial and insurance financial guy at Marsh & McLellan know this? And how is it that he became, he's also Jewish, by the way, but he became the governor of Iraq 3 years later?
Okay,
are we seeing any coincidences here? And you see, as I started looking at this, in 2006 or so, we had a trial over here in the United States for what they considered the 20th hijacker, Zachariah Massawi. Well, there weren't 19 hijackers, so who is this guy? Well, you know, he was connected to a laptop that was also connected to a CIA agent. Now, there's so many interesting things that I discovered as I continued looking, but after my second book, Methodical Deception, the first one was Methodical Illusion. After my second book came out, I got contacted by pilots from the military, civilian pilots, commercial pilots, air traffic controllers, military personnel, eyewitnesses that saw the aircraft landing in western Massachusetts. I have eyewitnesses for two of the four aircraft landing in that abandoned reserve Air Force base.
Right.
I had people from all over, aviation experts from all over the country that realized that what I had discovered for Methodical Illusion was true, and that the aircraft had been taken over remotely by a remote control system, that both the 757 and the 767 actually came off the assembly line with. But we also had a company that sold an additional flight termination system, which is the system we use to fly our drones around the world. And that gentleman that was the CEO of that company was also the comptroller of the United States Pentagon that Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, had just announced the day before had misplaced $2.3 trillion with a T dollars from the Pentagon budget. Yeah, with a T. Like tea and
with
crumpet.
A T, yes.
And I thought, well, now this is another interesting, a rabbi, an Israeli citizen, was the comptroller of the United States Pentagon. He was also the CEO of the company that sold the flight termination system, the remote control system that was used to land these aircraft.
It's just everything. Now, when you're looking at that yourself and thinking, the more I read into this, the more I look into it, the more people give me information, you know, it's saying a lot about what the government of it, why they wanted to go to war. That was a thing, wasn't it? We need to get after them because they've done this. They've done this. Let's go to war.
Exactly. It was a false flag. And then what happened was the media, being a branch of those intelligence agencies, just constantly showed things over and over. But for us airline people, what they showed over and over was the impossible. They showed the only pictures that we have of an airplane going into the South Tower that was an airplane that had some kind of pod attached to the bottom, which, by the way, is often the case with military remotely controlled aircraft. It was also showing us an airplane that slid through a steel, cement, and glass building, and it's impossible for an aluminum aircraft to do that. And it slid through even the very top of the tail, sliced right through that building like a hot knife through butter, and it just left little poof balls. That's not what would happen if an aluminum aircraft hit a building. Especially a building like the World Trade Center, they were designed to take multiple aircraft hits from what at the time of the building's design was a 707, which is very similar in size to the 757.
Yes. Yeah, and that's all they showed all night long for days on and days on.
Uh-huh. And that was part of the brainwashing. Yeah, we were brainwashed.
Yeah.
We were collectively, worldwide, we were brainwashed. And so after my first book came out, I got contacted by a researcher who had been pulling Freedom of Information Act data requests and had been doing this for 4 or 5 years and started sharing some files with me. And they were files of radar and typed transcripts and taped transcripts in MP3 files, like an audio file. And it was nearly a terabyte full of information. So I sent him an external hard drive, and he uploaded all of the information that he had and mailed it to me. And I knew that this was a much bigger project than just little old retired flight attendant me when the postage I paid for became $9.11. I knew when I saw that it was time that the whole world gets to see the truth about 9/11. Here's the problem. The data that was put in this huge, gigantic pile of data, this terabyte of information, was so complicated that even though I knew a lot of airport codes across the United States and the world, I did not understand what I was looking at, and I started praying for people to come. And, you know, my prayers were answered, and again, it has nothing to do with me. The truth has to come out, and there is a force much higher than me than really is got to be behind this, because air traffic controllers, pilots, military, guys from DARPA, which is the research and development of the military, scientists from the top colleges, universities across the country that had worked to help develop weapons and other things for the military, started coming forward. Together, we started sharing the files that I had, and together, they started uncovering the details of what comes out in my third book, Methodical Conclusion. And it is mind-blowing what we found. As a matter of fact, I was toiling about some of the information that I found, and I was traveling with my husband, and we wanted to get just a squirt of petrol, I think you call it over there, of gasoline for our car. So we were going to fill the tank in the morning and travel most of the day. So we were going to get our coffee and donuts and snacks and head out. So we stopped at a gas station. And I was talking to my husband about, do I want to put this in? Because it's so damning and it's so true, and we have proof on radar. And I was really toiling with it because, to me, it puts my life in danger and my family and friends in danger. And it exposes the truth of who really was involved. And it wasn't just the Mossad or other agencies involved in this. This really brings the involvement of the United States military to light. And so my husband puts the squirt of gas in and hands me the receipt. He said, I wasn't even looking. But check the price, $9.11. And I finished writing the book. And in those last chapters, people will see why I held back with that information. And what's happening now, this third book came out the 12th or 13th of July. It's worldwide now. You can order it on Amazon and hardback, softback. You can order it off my web pages also. And we do autographed books to the UK. I've done, I just did a box of them actually to Israel. I've got about 20 different countries I've sent autographed books to. So on all of my websites, you can get autographed books, and you can use PayPal. And if you're an international order, you just need to email the publisher. And it's all right there on in the information's there on the store. If you're international and you want to autograph books, we're just going to charge you whatever the postage is and for the price of the book. I love to do the autograph books. They're really a neat way to connect the reader and the author. I wasn't going to do it at first, but it's really
question. Rebecca, one of the questions, Tim was just coming in the chat room. Has the government ever got in touch with you?
Not the government per se, but about a month ago, when I was just finishing up writing this book, I got contacted by someone who I believe was a CIA agent who congratulated me on finding the truth about 9/11. And in particular, in The Methodical Deception, which is the second book, one of the things I found was that was most distressing to me was there was a group of Austrian Jewish artists living in the World Trade Center Tower on the 91st floor for the year leading up to 9/11. And so in my webpage for that book, themethodicaldeception.com, under the resources pages, you can see that these artists couldn't draw any better than a kindergarten child. So one of the things I also found out was there was a group of traveling artists from Israel traveling around the United States. They were found knocking on the door of IRS agents, U.S. Marshals, various different federal employees in the United States, DEA agents, that's our drug enforcement, FBI agents, and the like. And eventually, I believe it was a DEA agent who got wind of these Israeli art students traveling around pretending to be selling cheap prints from China to these employees. And sometimes they would show up at offices that they weren't even public knowledge of their location. And they were asking for security at their building and blueprints and the like. There is a 61-page DEA report, and some of these traveling art students were also demolition experts, ordnance experts, Sayeret Metcalf, Mossad, and IDF military experts in bomb making. Yes, indeed. And this was just a shocker for me. And so in finding the corporations and the relationships between some of the people we were led to believe made phone calls and actually were victims, and their company and the involvement with the United States military and government is in book two, The Methodical Deception. This gentleman that contacted me congratulated me for figuring it out, the Israeli art students, and then told me that there were actually six targets and that they had been briefed in June of 2001 of the coming attacks and that there would be six targets. Something went wrong with two of the takeovers. So that's one of the things I bring out in book three, The Methodical Conclusion, is what possibly went wrong. And I've actually been in contact with someone who is connecting me with the crew members from one of those flights that didn't get connected to the remote control takeover system. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation. I have never been harassed by any one agency, no, but I was congratulated for figuring it out.
Very strange, but... What about the Pentagon, then?
Well, the Pentagon, I think that's one of the things that most people realize. I mean, at the time, I remember Jamie McIntyre from CNN saying there was no plane crash here because, again, that building was brick and Kevlar and steel reinforced. There's no way an aluminum aircraft could slide right through and leave a, you know, 8-foot in diameter hole in the final ring inside the courtyard aspect, you know, in the center of the Pentagon. There was never any passengers found. There, the people that were killed, coincidentally, remember the $2.3 trillion that was missing that Donald Rumsfeld announced on September 10th? Though there were two offices, the offices of a naval investigation and the Army Auditor offices. They were not next to each other. Both of them were blown apart by bombs placed inside the Pentagon, and most all of the investigators that were investigating the $2.3 trillion missing were killed. Now, all you have to do is ask yourself, how would that benefit any Middle Eastern country or any Middle Eastern terrorist? It wouldn't. But who did it benefit?
No.
The good old Rabbi Dov Zakheim, who later on went to work for Booz Allen Hamilton. You can look up what they're involved in.
Yeah.
Booz Allen Hamilton. So he is,
Booz
and
Allen.
He also went on, Booz Allen Hamilton. He also went on to be the foreign policy advisor for a gentleman who ran for President Mitt Romney. As a matter of fact, there's a group called the Project for New American Century. It's often referred to as PNAC, P-N-A-C. Project for New American Century wrote a paper in the late 90s where they called for the need for a new Pearl Harbor type event to rally the American people around these seven pre-planned wars in the Middle East. And you can find that on Wikipedia, Project for a New American Century. It's interesting to note who the people are that signed that and where their spouses are oftentimes working today. In the Obama administration, in the United Nations, et cetera, et cetera. And some of the people that signed it are people like John Ellis Bush. You might recall his name is Jeb Bush. He goes by his initials, J-E-B.
Yeah.
He's a signer.
Yes,
so is Victoria Nuland's husband. It's interesting. These are mostly Jewish or what we call neocons that have signed that paper, but those wars were planned. They needed a false flag event, the new Pearl Harbor, and that's what 9/11 was.
I know you're still writing. What more can come out of this? Rebecca?
Well, one of the things that has come out in the third book is exactly who and how high up the involvement in the United States military and the U.S. government really truly was. And we have it in radar. It's in proof of their own documents. I just didn't know how to read them until air traffic controllers and people that knew how to get through this stuff could see what we saw. I wouldn't have had eyes to see it. Now, for me, I saw the protocols for the hijacking were not followed. The code words weren't used. The pilots didn't do what they should have. The flight attendants didn't do what they should have done. And then when I put together the fact that the airplane's altitude and their rate of descent, what was going on, and we've got people that were sitting on the airplane acting like they were just having tea and crumpets and having a chit-chat with their best friend. Yet the aircraft was coming out of the sky 6 to 10,000 feet per minute. That's a frightening experience. That's what would happen if you had a decompression and we needed to get you down where you could breathe to the 10,000 foot level or so. And it's very frightening. The aircraft makes a huge amount of noise. You will hear people screaming. And yet on Flight 93, which is the one that supposedly went through into the ground and made just a divot. Again, no bodies, no airplane parts, no luggage, no nothing from that airplane was ever found in that ditch. It's just like it went into the earth for it's crazy. That's impossible.
And then just disappeared. Never happen.
Exactly.
Would never happen. If you crashed, there would be documents, there would be bags, there would be bodies. And it would be spread over quite a fair way.
Exactly. And also, one of the things that most people don't know is this is the flight where the guy said, "Let's roll," Todd Beamer. Well, Todd Beamer's phone, his cell phone, somehow miraculously managed to continue making phone calls until around 9 o'clock that night. That phone call that he was on ended up being, now this is according to the United States government from the Zachariah Massawi trial, his phone call continued on for 3,925 seconds, or until almost 11 o'clock that morning his cell phone was still connected. It's impossible. That's at Shanksville. So he went all the way into the earth. His phone call, not only did it continue on, but his cell phone continued to make phone calls or receive phone calls until 8:58 p.m. that night. This is an impossibility. And that was actually put in by the FBI to the Zachariah 20th hijacker trial. That's where I found it. And so you see, when you start to put all the pieces of the puzzle together, which is why I have puzzle pieces on my book cover.
I can see that
when
your
you
book.
Start. Yeah. When you start to put all the pieces of the puzzle together, a completely different story emerges. And had I not been joined by aviation experts from around the world that truly wanted to get the truth out about 9/11 as badly as I did, and I was driven on behalf of the flight attendants and the pilots and those people that jumped out of those towers and the people who have been murdered across the Middle East over a charade. This was a card trick, a false flag, a complete illusion, and a deception.
Yes. There is
more. One of the things that the United States government has denied from the get-go is that we had aircraft that are called E-4Bs. They're 747s. They're highly technological aircraft that, can do just about anything. We're often referred to as the doomsday plane. So if our president goes to the UK, goes to Scotland to go golfing, what have you, one of those E-4Bs travels with him, because that's a command and control center. If there's a nuclear war, he'll get in that plane. These are called. That's why they're called doomsday planes. There were three of the four E-4Bs in the air that morning. We have this on radar. This is something to this very day the United States government has denied.
Right. So do you think Clinton was involved?
Which one, Hillary or Bill?
Bill.
Well, you know, I don't know that he was involved so much in 9/11 because he was out of the government by this time. He was involved with the United States government security. Osama bin Laden, by the way, was a CIA asset who went by the name of Tim Osman. He was visited the United States in the mid-80s. And one of the things you'll learn in my three books is that these are real people. I just changed their details in their name. But I've had special forces people come to me with the story 3 days after 9/11. They were in Afghanistan. Within 3 weeks, they had Osama bin Laden in their sights and were denied the ability to shoot. They needed to keep the boogeyman alive. Now,
just keep him
I've
alive
been contacted
for a bit longer.
Yeah, exactly, because he was the big boogeyman. Now, the FBI never claimed that he was a part of the 9/11 event at all. And nor has the FBI ever removed the name of the accused hijackers that are, in fact, still alive. And I believe four of them are pilots for Air Tunisia, Moroccan Air or Air Morocco, and I think Saudi Air has one. These are Saudi citizens that are still flying to this very day. Some of them had been in the United States in some aspect of airline or flying training and had their passports stolen. But they're still alive and still flying. And the FBI has never changed their official story. Those people will go down in history unless I change history by bringing the truth out.
Well, that's good for you to fetch all the truth out. And an hopefully, I'm not going to say in the end, I'm sure there'll be more to come as well.
You know, I've already started on another book, and partly I want to help people understand how manipulated they are by the media and Hollywood. And how the media, it's legal in the United States to lie to you via the media and call it news. They can tell you anything they want. They can show you that airplane going over like they did thousands of times to embed it in your reality. They can brainwash you, and you have been brainwashed. I was too, so don't feel bad. As a flight attendant, I knew it was impossible to see an aluminum aircraft go into a building like that through like a hot knife through butter. It was impossible. And so many airline people have contacted me saying, have you figured out how they made it look like an airplane went through that building like that? Well, they have technology.
Surely. Yes, that's so true as well. But a lot of people out there will be so proud of you for what you've done for a lot of people around the world, because their knowledge of what they saw was it really happened. But now the truth is coming out now where it didn't. It was just blown up. So I'm glad.
Well, yeah.
I'm not going to say there's going to be any disclosure over it, because it will be still talked in another 50 years' time.
Yeah, it's interesting that people oftentimes think they saw it on TV, so it must have been real. But if you just go to a Hollywood movie and watch, you know, one of the disaster movies like Inferno or the earthquake movie, the San Andreas movie or the 2012 where the earth was falling apart, and you see all the special effects, don't think for a minute that the news any given day of the week is not doing something similar. They can, and they can do it in the United States legally. I don't know about your laws, but they passed a law in the United States that it's legal to lie for propaganda purposes.
I don't know what about the UK, but I should imagine it would be the same, because they'd only show things. It's like For instance, a UFO. In the UK, they never ever show UFOs on TV in the national news. You never see anything like that. So, something like the towers blowing up, they just repeat and repeat the same thing all the time.
You know, you guys get all the crop circles, though.
Yes, we do, yes.
More so mysteries. How does the government explain
More
that?
Mysteries. Yes, I know. But, you know, things will be explained sooner or later with that as well. I'm so happy you came on the show tonight, and I'm glad all the listeners out there will they can go in the archives and listen to it. As soon as the show finishes it, I will send the episode to you in the message to you so you can listen to it. And you can send it to your friends or so everybody gets to hear it. And I will tell everybody to listen to the show tonight as well. Because there's lots of people out there saying, what a load of rubbish, what are you talking about, Bob? That's a load of rubbish. I saw that on TV. That play went straight in there. I said, no.
What people don't often realize is the impossibility that airline people see when they look at that plane going through that building like a hot knife through butter. It's impossible.
Yes. And I suppose, you know, you get a lot of people out there will be saying, well, I've seen it there, I've done this. But there might be a lot of other people out there who'd be too frightened to talk. I'm glad people come to you and talk about it now.
Yeah, me too. If it weren't for them, I would never have gotten this third book written, because this really truly is the miracle of God in this third book, because the truth really is out there now. And the books go in succession. They are all connected. Methodical Illusion, the first, Deception, the second, and Conclusion, the third.
Yes.
The same characters. It's a kind of a continuation.
Yes. And you're on about writing another book now as well.
Yes, I'm going to take a little vacation, but my mind is already spinning and I'm still doing research.
I can imagine so. Because I presume you get phone calls all the time saying, I've read that book and I want to tell you something.
Exactly. That's exactly
and
what happens.
And then you're writing it all down and thinking, oh, yeah, I've thought about that. I better look into that now.
Yeah. And it just keeps going.
And it's like that, isn't it? Whenever you're trying to solve a mystery, it'll happen like that, where you might think you're coming to an end and then somebody comes up with a question. And you think, well, I never thought about that.
What I find
so
is
I'll
that there were people that were eyewitnesses couldn't make sense of what they saw. For instance, the people that saw the aircraft landing in Western Massachusetts, they thought they were witnessing a plane crash. But yet on the news, what happened was something in Pennsylvania, something at the Pentagon, and something in New York, and they just could never get it to work in their mind. What happened to the plane I saw landing or crashing? And then they realized the planes were taken to Westover, and they know the base. So that's how they've come forward.
Beautiful. Yeah. Anyway, we're running out of time, unfortunately. When you're doing our show, it doesn't go long. It isn't long enough sometimes. But by Friday, I'm going with another network. I'm going to be working for Beacon of Light Radio. A bit more professionally done, but we'll still have guests on. I can still have the guests who I want on, which is nice. But what I would say is thank you so much, Rebecca, for coming on the show tonight. It's you know, hearing your stories and your books, and I'm sure I'll have to get your books now, 1, 2, and 3, and maybe 4 as well, because they're all concluding from one to the other, and I'd love to read them all now.
got your curiosity. Well, thank you so much for having me, Bob.
It's a pleasure. But once I get up and running with a new show, later on, and when you've got your book, another book out, I'll have you on the other show. And I'm sure by then I'll have read the other three and on my way to recovery now.
Sounds
another
great.
6 weeks, 4 weeks, and I should I should be up and running, as we say.
Very good. I'm glad everything's going well for your recovery.
Oh, lovely, Rebecca. Anyway, you take care. Have a lovely weekend coming up.
And, will do. Thank
I will
you so
talk
much.
To you. Thank you as well.
Thanks, guys. All right.
Bye.